Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about Flutter. Flutter is Google's mobile app SDK for crafting high-quality native interfaces on both iOS and Android in record time. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 511, recorded December 19th, 2018. Flutter 1.0. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Command Line Heroes, a podcast from Red Hat. Listen to the epic true tales of the developers, programmers, hackers, geeks, and open source rebels revolutionizing the technology landscape. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit redhat.com/heroes today. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/floss. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free Libre open source software. I'm your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and being unaware of it, projects you may want to download and play with right after this show. I bet today is going to be one of those if you're not already familiar with this project. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Well, I'll take lovely. I don't know about talented.
I think you should take them both. I think you have experience that you can take both of those. It's going to be just fine. This week I am back home, which is nice. I like being home. And you look in a slightly different position. What happened there?
Yeah, we got some new furniture. So until we can get the the garbage folks to pick up the old one or donate it to something, we have to keep it inside because it's raining. So I can't put it outside. There's no space in the garage because it's California. So it's sitting here in my study, and the kids are all excited because they think it's kind of like their own little fort here in the study that they can sleep and do all sorts of stuff. So it's kind of fun. Christmas time.
Awesome. Woo-hoo. Awesome. So this week is not only the last show of 2018, and it'll be show 511 by the time we get this finished, it's also a show that's very near and dear to me because we're going to be talking about Flutter. Flutter is Google's software development kit that allows you to design beautiful applications for both iOS and Android from one code base, more or less, and do it rapidly. So it's like it's a game changer. And I know you don't want to use the words game changer unless it really is, but this really is. I've been playing with it for about a couple years now, I guess ever since it was like an early alpha or something. It's designed in Dart, and I've been playing with Dart for 6 or 7 years now. So I've been kind of tracking the project since the very early days. But it's very exciting, and we have a very important guest on to cover this, and that's Eric Seidel. He's been involved with the project since the beginning. In fact, we're going to talk a little bit about the history of how Flutter came about and also about where it's at today. He works for Google, and he's been one of the co-project leads for since the beginning, even before it was called Flutter. He's going to be coming on in a few minutes. I'm excited about this because I'm actually writing mobile apps now. I never thought I'd do that. I was occasionally toying with the idea of learning Objective-C and trying to build iOS apps, and it was consuming too much of my brain. Dart, though, on the other hand, is really easy to learn, really fun to play with. And there's this wonderful feature we'll get into the show called Hot Reload, which essentially allows you to make minor changes in your application and see the results within less than a second on the screen. So you don't have these normal, you probably all seen the XKCD comic, you probably have it on your wall where it says compiling. this is not like that. This is like you're instantly doing it. You're actually more productive. You can go home earlier in the day because things get done like that. So what do you know about this so far, Aaron?
I know a little bit about mobile apps. We monitor mobile applications at AppDynamics, and I've written a few apps myself, but I've never used Flutter, so I'm actually anxious to learn what the advantages are to using Flutter besides being able to run heterogeneously between iOS and Android. I think you mentioned one of them, which is this. I was watching one of the videos actually, and the hot load. I thought that they were just mocking it up. Like I thought they were just We're going to hot load this, right? Like, let's just push the code out. Yeah, whatever. But no, it actually is a really cool feature. And so I'm anxious to learn, like, okay, when you do something like that, how do you actually monitor that the change that you just made, that you just pushed out, is actually not causing problems, right, for your application? So yeah, really excited to learn more about it.
Well, let's get right into it. But right before that, I do have an important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Command Line Heroes, an original podcast for geeks by geeks from Red Hat, a company that has been bringing open source technologies to the enterprise for 25 years. Command Line Heroes are the developers, programmers, hackers, geeks, and open source rebels who are revolutionizing the technology landscape. The Command Line Heroes podcast is hosted by Saran Yitbarak, a developer who founded Code Newbie and lives and breathes open source software. Season 2 is all about living on the command line and tracking the changes that shape the world of open source development, from programming languages to learning about supercomputers, hybrid clouds, and more. The Season 2 finale brings everything together by seeing how open source powers some of our grandest projects. And what better way to see what we're capable of accomplishing with open source than with the people responsible for taking their work out of this world? Tom Soderstrom, Chief Technology and Innovation Officer for IT at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, shares how innovation flourishes with open source. From projects we all contribute, like building our own rover, to more specialized needs like solar flare predicting. And Hila Lifshitz-Asaf, professor at Stern School of Business, confirms that more minds simply make for better work with her research on the agency's true embrace of open source. Visit redhat.com/heroes to check it out today. Subscribe to Command Line Heroes wherever you get your podcasts. Visit redhat.com/heroes for extras and to learn more. That's redhat.com/heroes. And we thank Command Line Heroes from Red Hat for their support of Floss Weekly. I showed this last week, but I have more bandwidth this week, so I was going to do it again. Anyway, I was at KubeCon last week, and Red Hat was there. And they were making these caricatures for me, which is really cool. So I brought that back with me. So anyway, again, Command Line Heroes, wonderful thing. Let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Eric Seidel. Welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Hey, and where are you speaking to us from?
I'm here at one of the studios on Google's campus.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I recognize those ferns. We had Adam Barth on, I guess, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And so you, in our conversation ahead of the show, you said, well, I got to make sure I have those ferns. So it definitely worked. So give us a 30,000-foot view. So when someone is reaching for Flutter, what problem are they trying to solve?
We're here to just make development better. So people come to Flutter because they want a better way to develop for mobile. We talk about Flutter as helping people build beautiful things, help people be productive when they're building things, help the end results be fast, and of course, you know, well integrated with the rest of the systems that they need to integrate with.
So you've been involved with Flutter since the beginning, even before it was called Flutter. It was called Sky back then or something, and maybe even something else even before that internally. How did it get started? They're already cross-platform solutions for iOS and Android. Why did you need something different?
Well, we didn't actually start trying to build anything cross-platform. A bunch of us who had worked on the web, we worked as part of Chrome. And we eventually hit a point of frustration where we felt like we couldn't move the web as fast as we want to. And we started trying various radical things. One of the radical things we tried was taking a razor to Chrome and cutting away lots of bits and just see how fast we could make it. And that experiment resulted in some 20-time speedups on various benchmarks we cared about, and told us that there was some gold worth digging for, and we ended up experimenting further and eventually built the system that became Flutter, but that took some years.
Is Chrome getting slow because of all these complicated new rules from the W3C about things like CSS and other layout things?
Oh no, maybe I'm biased. I worked on Chrome for a long time, so I think Chrome is quite fast at what it does. It's just when you're solving a problem of being compatible with things that are 30 years old and have a different set of constraints, as well as also trying to do all the fancy new things, that's a very, very difficult problem to solve. It's just a very complicated problem. And when you have all that complexity, things slow down.
So you built this version of Chrome that was all stripped down, and but that wasn't that obviously didn't stop there. When did Dart come into play?
So Dart came into play, I want to say maybe 9 months into the project. We had built a couple of versions of the system. The first several versions of the system were built in JavaScript, but we eventually had trouble, you know, unit testing to 100%. And just making sure that our large and growing JavaScript system held together. And we also had trouble with startup time, and we had trouble with predictable performance, and we went looking for other languages that might be able to offer us that, and ended up with Dart.
Now, why Dart and not Java?
Oh, I don't recall all the details of why not Java. There are obviously some complexities in the Java ecosystem. I think that it was more we looked at, again, a large variety of languages and had a set of goals that we wanted any language to fill. And Dart, again, did a good job of filling those goals. Particularly, it had a strong garbage collector, which allowed us to build a reactive style system where we allocate sometimes thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of objects in a single frame. It also had an AOT mode, so it could have fast, predictable startup time, as well as predictable performance once it didn't have like warm-up time. It also had things like hot reload, which not many other languages had. And there's a variety of other of reasons that we list on the FAQ at flutter.io.
And did you work with the Dart team to get new features added to it?
Oh, definitely. The Dart team was extremely responsive. Dart had seen a lot of success inside Google in its web incarnation, which involves taking Dart and translating it to JavaScript, and had seen less success with its like custom VM and AOT compiler, et cetera. And so the Dart team was very happy to work with us and evolve the language to be much better for what we needed to do. And that was, again, a huge contributing factor to us being successful with Dart as a language.
And I understand that Flutter is actually being adopted heavily. I think the most recent figure I saw was something like 3,000 applications in the Google Play Store. Does that meet or exceed your expectations at this point?
I think that Flutter has really exploded well beyond my expectations. We set like user monthly goals for the year that we thought were aggressive, and we've tripled them by the end of this year. And yeah, the applications are actually a pretty strong lagging indicator. There are lots and lots of applications out in the Play Store, and that's just you can have thousands and tens of thousands, if hundred thousands of developers, and the applications just take a while to get out. But that's 3,000, I think, even just in the last year. But yeah, it's strong growth in adoption, wow, which has been great.
And what is it you were announcing on December 4th in London?
Yeah, so we went to London and had a big party with the Flutter community, or some parts of the Flutter community, and importantly, sort of spread throughout the world. There were all these viewing parties, over, I think, 150 separate viewing parties just across the world, people watching and participating in the celebration. And we were celebrating Flutter 1.0. We were finally announcing that we were out to the world as we had our first stable release, and celebrating all the success of all the many, many teams, you know, some big names who had shipped with Flutter at that point, and a bunch of partners who were launching additional related products to Flutter as part of that launch event.
And I was excited. I mean, the whole time I was just being more and more inspired by that. I probably should disclose that I'm not only participating in Flutter as a user, I'm also a Flutter GDE, which means that I've been camping on Gitter and Stack Overflow and giving presentations live at conferences. And that's been really thrilling and fulfilling for me. And I'm really happy to be one of the many people that's helping to promote Flutter around the world. So when I was watching Flutter Live, though, I kept looking at all the cool things that were actually being rolled out that I wasn't even aware of because I didn't make the previous GDE meeting, sorry. But it was like, not only is it, you know, 1.0 on iOS and Android, but you also had, you talked about the desktop experience. And can you tell us more about that?
That's right. Flutter is used at Google in a bunch of different form factors beyond iOS and Android. And one of the teams here at Google has taken Flutter and is using it on the desktop. And so that is also an open source project at GitHub/Google/Flutter Desktop Embedder, I believe. And we use that to present our slides. So we had a dramatic reveal of where the slides were all actually Flutter in the end, which worked quite well. We also talked about some other form factors that we've seen Flutter run on or are exploring. So recently there was an article published about someone porting Flutter to a Raspberry Pi as just an example of how portable. And we also showed some early experiments of us running Flutter on the web because Dart has the ability to compile to JavaScript, as we talked about. Obviously, you don't have the whole custom Flutter engine, you know, all those sort of bits that we had stripped out of Chrome originally, but you instead can use, you know, actual Chrome. So we have some experiments working on right now about running Flutter on the web.
And that's pretty exciting, actually, to me, that you could write the same code that gets shared server-side, browser-side through Angular Dart, maybe browser-side through, I think they called it Hummingbird, which is what you were just talking about, and also iOS and Android and desktop. Do you foresee Dart continuing to sort of invade pretty much every form factor?
I mean, that's certainly what we're seeing here at Google. We're seeing Dart be very flexible in how and where it can go, and that so we see it used in all sorts of different form factors. And I would expect to see much of that repeated in the public as well, as people continue to see the power of having a portable language like Dart that can just be used all sorts of places.
And let's talk a little bit about hot reload for a second, because that is one of the sexiest features, I think, of this whole thing. It's like I haven't seen it anywhere else. So what are the – how does that work? Can you give us sort of the – a lot of our audience is pretty technical, so feel free to be technical if you want.
Yeah, so hot reload works because everything in Dart is just an object and just stored in a heap, including the code. And so Flutter does the framework helps out a lot here by separating the state, the things that you want to persist, from the actual UI explanations. So in Flutter, every frame you knew up a whole tree of effectively sort of templates of how you want the pixels to look that frame, and then the system is there to keep track of how it looked last frame and do the adjustments in the underlying render objects between the two. Hot reload takes advantage of everything just being an object in the heap and just sends new code. And then when we run the next frame and we new up the next set of objects, yes, we keep the state around because those are instantiated objects from the previous frame. But all the your new code can just run and produce a wholly new frame. And all your state stuck around, but your pixels now look totally different, or are a different expression of the state. And so hot reload is very effective for allowing you to have literally sub-second compile times or iteration cycles, which we see this used all over the place now at Google, because it's very empowering. You then no longer have to have this sort of separate design phase of your application from the actual building it. We see teams who like literally sit their designers right next to their engineers, or just let the designers code with Flutter because they find it, some of them find it very understandable enough, you know, fitting to their world models. So we see people take advantage of this hot reload to just iterate very, very quickly on their designs with their teams.
Yeah, I was just sitting next to somebody at a restaurant, and we started chatting and started talking about Flutter. And he's a designer by training. He does, you know, web design, stuff like that. And I said, well, you know, if you're trying to learn a language, I suggest you learn Dart. You start coding in Flutter, and you can start making mobile apps, which is where everything's at these days. And he was pretty excited by that, so I gave him some URLs and stuff to get started. So there was a couple other things announced at Flutter Live, something about an animation kit.
Yeah, so we have we've found a friend in the community, another company called Two Dimensions, and they build these various animation tools. One of which is this called Flare, which they announced with us at Flutter Live, and is really cool. and has all this, you can like set bones and, you know, set all the various animation curves, and then you produce this blob basically that then just gets sent over to your Flutter app during hot reload. And so you can edit your animation, export it out, and send it to your live running Flutter app, and then quickly iterate on your animations in the same way. Again, sort of bringing the designers and the developers closer together to help them produce more beautiful things.
And again, just to name drop a little bit more, one of the things that was announced, which I'm pretty excited by, is Square Payments now has full support, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've seen this across the mobile industry as people, you know, as Flutter has gotten more stable and further along, people are interested in participating in that ecosystem. And Square was another early partner who was interested in porting or wrapping their existing iOS and Android SDKs with a Dart, you know, shell, so that they could be easily used from Flutter. And they announced two payment SDKs for Flutter at the Flutter Live event.
You know, and that's what's interesting about all this is that the the fact that I can write most of my code in Dart, as I said in the opening, but I can still talk to native Kotlin and Java on one side, and of course, Objective-C or Swift on the other side. So I can basically, I can still get to the parts of the system that I don't have direct Dart access for.
Mm-hmm. That's very important. It's as I talked about. We have sort of four principles that we guide the product with. One is that the things we produce be beautiful. We're here to help people produce beautiful things. That it be productive. While we're doing that, that's part of where Hot Reload comes in, and all the other investments that we do across the board in terms of our developer tooling, in terms of our docs, in terms of all the video guides that we produce, et cetera, just trying to help people be productive, that the end results be fast. The very first thing that started this project was all that work on performance, right? We came from Chrome and just were trying to make things faster. So Flutter, from its get-go, has been trying to be fast. And then the final one is being open. Right, that Flutter is not an island. Right, you're not going to write all your code in Dart. There are these existing mobile ecosystems, and you need to be able to use some Kotlin code, or use some Objective-C code, or use some third-party library. Sure, you can write you know, the vast majority of your code, and certainly all the UI in Flutter. But we have to admit to ourselves that we need to be open participants in the rest of the ecosystem.
So speaking of that, I mean, there are other players in this space, right? The most obvious one is native Android. So, I mean, given that these are both mostly run from Google, isn't there some sort of a competitive factor here between, you know, native development with the SDK and Flutter? Does that present some sort of a conflict of interest? But how well do you get along with those folks in the office, I guess?
I mean, personally, I get along well, or at least I perceive that relationship is going well. I have lunch pretty regularly with various members of the Android team. We sit in similar areas of the company. You know, there aren't a lot of people in the world writing UI frameworks, so there's a bit of a sort of kindred spirit aspect to, you know, meeting others. You know, we also talk still with folks that I worked in Chrome. I actually had lunch with some folks from Facebook who work on, you know, UI frameworks as well, you know, recently. Again, there's just not a lot of us. So I certainly don't see it as any sort of competition. We solve different problems, but both important problems to solve.
Yeah, for sure. And there are other frameworks out there for writing code for mobile. So the one that comes to mind that I usually hear most often is React Native for folks that like JavaScript. And they have some hot reload functionality as well. There's also Cordova, and you know, probably coming in third is something like Xamarin or something like that. I mean, how does Flutter compare with those tools?
Yeah, so again, I think that we sort of all solve different problems. As you identified, my understanding of the React ecosystems, that those are about JavaScript and using one's JavaScript skills in many, many places. The Cordova that you mentioned is about web technology and using web technology skills. Xamarin is, you know, has its own sort of slice of interested parties, which others could speak more intelligently to than I. Flutter, I should also point out, didn't start with the goal of cross-platform. And still, some would nitpick around that maybe it's more about multi-platform than it is about cross-platform. Flutter is about building the best way to develop software for mobile, for screens. And most of that development is typically for a single platform. Like you set out, like, I want this thing to work on my iPhone. And just when building the best way, part of building that, we realized that it needed to be a very layered system. And it turns out when you build a very layered system, it's very easy to sort of cleave off the bottom layers and have the whole system move easily. Some of it also stemmed from us having worked on browsers for so many years. And so things running on phones or on our desktops or on whatever computer we happen to have in front of us, all being the same code base, felt very natural to us.
And then how would I monitor an app in Flutter? This is something I brought up in the intro. We were talking about it. Would I monitor that any differently than I would monitor an application that was written completely native or in some other framework? How would I know, for example, that the changes that I made that I pushed out weren't causing a problem in my application performance or whatever?
Yeah. So some of this is you would use the same tools that you use already. This is part of, again, the openness. But not every single tool, depending on how it hooks in, is going to understand all of the parts of Flutter. And so we are helping assist various members of that ecosystem, both at Google and elsewhere, to help make sure that their systems know how to understand Dart code, know how to understand running Flutter code. But many of these things just sort of work out of the box. Like some of your existing crash reporting systems, when it crashes in Java code, you know, there is some underlying Java code underlying your Flutter app. And when it crashes in Java code, the normal crash reporting systems work. We had to do some work to teach some of those crash reporting systems how to understand crashes in Dart code, though, for example.
Right. So it sounds like the best thing if I was to go talk to my developers and have them write some support for Flutter would be to start with Dart, probably, and make sure that Dart is very well supported. And then if we have that, the Flutter part of that, the mobile part of that, would be pretty easy to implement, it sounds like.
Yeah, I'm not sure I fully understood the question. One way to think about Flutter is that, or one way that I compare it when speaking to, in a sort of mildly technical context is, which again, this is maybe a more technical audience than that, but as I talk about it as being very similar architecture to something like Unity or a game engine, where it typically takes over the entire screen, but maybe runs in a different language or a different VM than the rest of the underlying OS. But that's what we do at Flutter. So we typically use Flutter in a full screen capacity, and the whole system is an engine that is designed, but not for running games. It's an engine designed for running apps. And it just happens that because that engine is designed in a portable way, you get to use that same engine everywhere. So yes, if you were trying to set up all your existing systems, most of your existing systems, if they exist and they work for iOS or they work for Android, they will just work with Flutter because it's just an Android app or it's just an iOS app, at the underlying levels. But there also may be some modifications you would want to make to your existing monitoring systems to help them even better understand the Dart parts of the Flutter system.
Okay, perfect. Now that's a great way to explain it. I really appreciate that. We do have a question from the audience that I wanted to pull in because it actually relates to what we were just talking about. This is from the Andromedan in the chat room. He says, does Flutter support developing in a programming language other than Dart? Could I use something else and then use Flutter on top of it?
I'm not aware of any other language to use with Flutter because the whole system is written in Dart. One of the things that's different about Flutter is that runtime is actually really small. So say unlike the web where the browser provides you a giant API surface, Flutter, the API surface that comes out of that little C++ binary, that little runtime, is really, really tiny. It's just for pushing pixels to the screen. And then everything else in Flutter is plugin. That's, again, part of this sort of openness, being able to connect to the rest of the system. And so then the mass of Flutter, all of the widgets, all of the text input, all of the undo stack, all of the scroll behaviors, all of that stuff is all written up in Dart. So to use a different language with it would mean maybe sitting another language on top of, which I could imagine doing, but No, the simple answer is no. The whole Flutter system is written in Dart.
Okay, that's fair. The project currently is hosted on GitHub.com. Is that correct?
That's right.
Do people submit issues with the code, or do you get requests from outside of Google as well, or is it mostly just from Google and Google developers?
So Flutter has been open since day one. The very first commit was public on GitHub. It has always been that way. All of the developers who work on Flutter work entirely on GitHub. And as I said, it's been that way for at least the last 4 years that we've been developing there. We have, over that time, and increasingly so recently, received contributions from hundreds and hundreds of external contributors, and we have thousands of issues that we have received from external developers. The bulk of the engineering, day-to-day, you know, checking in patches, still comes out of Google, but I would hope as the project continues and the community continues to expand, that one day Google might be in the minority.
Cool.
So I don't mean to interrupt here, Aaron, but we do have some important business to do before we can continue, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Let's talk about buying a home for a minute. Because of rising interest rates, there's a lot of unpredictability when it comes to buying a home these days. It's causing a lot of anxiety with folks. Well, our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that. They're calling it the power buying process. Here's how it works. Step one, answer a few simple questions, and they'll check your credit for pre-qualified approval. Step two, Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours to give you a verified approval, which gives you all the strength of a cash buyer. Step three, once you're verified, you can qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, to lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. Now, here's the best part. If rates go up, your rate stays the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. Either way, you win. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/floss. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/floss. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Floss Weekly. So let's get back to the questions. I'm still excited by even just having the show. And I'm also excited by Flutter 1.0 because I know that means a higher adoption rate with some of the people that were sort of standing by the rails. One of the things I want to talk about is the IDE experience. You kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, is that since this is all in Dart all the way down to the C++ level, if I don't know how a particular button works, I can just hit C source in my IDE, I use Visual Studio Code, and it goes to the source, so I can see exactly how this works. It's so inspiring to be able to do that, because if you're programming in, say, something like, on traditional Android or heaven forbid, iOS, where the sources definitely aren't available, you have to go to an entirely different system to go see all that. So if a button's API isn't described well, or it seems to be misbehaving, you're kind of left hanging. Have other people reported this is useful?
Oh yeah, this was a very intentional design decision. Flutter, again, was born out of the web, and there was a cultural thing going on in the web at the time that we started Flutter. I don't recall exactly. It was some sort of manifesto. It was about that the web APIs should focus on, instead of adding more APIs, explaining the existing APIs that existed there. And we sort of took that to heart. That was sort of in the drinking water while we were starting Flutter. And so Flutter is this highly layered system, and we try very hard to write everything in Dart, so that's all in the same language as you write the rest of your application in, and that everything is easy to understand, but even if it isn't, you can just jump to definition all the way down. Because the lowest level of the system is, again, just pushing pixels to the screen. And you can go look at that C++ code on GitHub too if you want, but the vast majority of everything you're dealing with is all upwritten in Dart, all for code that you can read, you can change, you can edit, you can fork in your project itself. And then thanks to Dart's tree-shaking compiler, when it compiles it all down, only the bits of that system that you actually used, whether the ones you edited or not, are what is actually included in your final resulting application.
I remember wanting to write the demo applications having both a plus and a minus button. And I was thinking, well, I really need to be able to put something more than a single FAB down there. And I went, okay, no, view source. Oh, it's just taking a widget there. I can put any widget I want, including a column or a row. And it was really great being able to get directly into the source code with that. It really improved my productivity, and it's already improving a lot of things. I actually got to say, there's so much content being generated here. I was hoping to be, because of my background as being the leading Perl trainer for many years, that I'd have a huge volume of content and be ahead of everybody else. But I am really losing that battle because there's just so much stuff. I can't keep up with all the videos I see every day on Flutter. So the uptake is definitely there. It's been amazing. So now that you hit 1.0, you're just going to sit back in your laurels, right?
No, we're sort of just trying to survive the ride. The growth of the community has been dramatic. The number of customer growth has been dramatic. And my little team has been getting bigger for a long time, but we are trying to scale, continuing to try and scale. We're always hiring to meet the needs of our customers, both inside Google and the rest of the world. So
and I know
lots
Google,
of work to
Google,
do.
I know Google can't talk about futures, but one of the things I've been told and been able to repeat is that if you watch the issues on GitHub, you guys are actually tracking sort of your roadmap by burning down the issues. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's a very, very intentional. We're trying to make our roadmaps even more explicit in the public. But right now, yeah, you can totally look at all of the issues and all of the milestones. And we try and do everything about Flutter, barring the few confidential customers that we have. Or I guess the long list of confidential customers at this point. But barring the confidential customers, we do everything publicly in the open source in GitHub.
And does this thing have – I know the answer to this. I'm asking you questions I already know all the answers to, but that's just for the audience. Does Flutter support things like animation?
Yeah. So, again, part of the beautiful aspect, one of the things that we did for early on was we went to the material design team and basically asked them to dream big. We wanted them to give us – all of the designs that they had tried to evangelize for material design and maybe hadn't successfully seen implemented. And so we tried to design a system that could do, all of their wildest dreams. And of course, that includes, powerful animation primitives. One of the things you alluded to before, I'm learning through this conversation, there's just so many interesting parts of Flutter to talk about. Yeah. One of the things you alluded to before was the widgets. Right. And so everything is a widget in Flutter. It's widgets all the way down, which is a very powerful simplifying assumption. And as you said, anywhere sort of you you go and you look at the fab code and of course it's widgets. So you can replace it with some other widget you want, which is very powerful. And there's a similar sort of pattern. We talk about this pattern in terms of composition. Over inheritance, that we would compose lots of widgets together. So like padding in the whole system is implemented as a separate padding widget because that's all that widget needs to do. It's very, very simple. And you would compose that padding widget with some other widget that doesn't need to know anything about padding or doesn't need to inherit from the paddable box or something like that. And you have a similar thing going on in the animation system, which part of what makes it so powerful is that you have all these little tiny pieces that you can compose together and you can replace and you can extend. And if you don't like the curves that happen to come baked out of the box because those were the ones we wrote for some, to help the teams at Google or to help the material design designers, you can, of course, add your own. And the whole system is extensible in that way.
And the Andromedan in the chat room just asked the next question I was actually going to ask, which is, do the UI elements use native components or are the UI elements drawn by Flutter like Java Swing?
So I wouldn't necessarily compare to Swing, but yes, the native components are all drawn by Flutter. Again, taking that game engine analogy, when you look at the things on the screen and you're playing a game that was written in Unity, all of the pixels on the screen are drawn by Unity, and the same thing, all of the pixels are typically drawn by Flutter. That said, Flutter, again, as part of the open principle, can be composed in either way with native. So you can either take a Flutter, that view, that Flutter full screen is just a view. It's just an Android surface view. And so you can stick it in your Android hierarchy somewhere. You can make it smaller. You can make it big. Same thing on iOS. And you also can compose the other way. We recently announced at Flutter, at this Flutter Live event, about that we now supported platform views, as we call them. So there's a UIKit view abstraction and there's an Android view abstraction in the Flutter framework, which allow you to embed another UIKit view or another Android view in your system. And this is how we do web views, or this is how we do map views. I will say those come with a cost. There are costs when you mix systems like that, but it is very possible.
And I understand that the material design widgets are like probably the only complete implementation of material, right?
So I can't speak to the completeness of all the other implementations, but I can say that we do, again, work very closely with the material design team. Again, we went to that team very early on and was saying, you know, give us your wildest dreams and we'll implement them. And so when they came out with a refreshed material announced at this last I.O., we, of course, had worked with them deeply to make sure that we were implementing all of the new pieces to their highest expectations.
And I also understand you have emulators. Well, it's not really emulators. The whole thing's emulated in some sense. but Pixel Perfect, or as close to it, widgets for stuff out of iOS. I think you call them Cooper New widgets.
That's right. So, again, this highly layered system, the highest layers are typically layers that express a design opinion. And so we do have a set of widgets out of the box that expresses a material design opinion. That, again, we've worked with the material design team here at Google to implement initially for our internal Google customers, but obviously also lots of people in the public use material design as well. And we also have an implementation of iOS design language, which we call Cupertino, that widget set, where we've looked at the Apple guidelines, we've looked at the Apple widgets, and we've helped make a faithful implementation so that your sliders can look perfect on iOS, and your buttons can look perfect on iOS, and your dialogues, etc. We actually have found these design systems very easy to implement in Flutter, and one of the things that we typically see actually is that people start with one of these design systems, and then they decide, well, maybe I want to branch out and do something of my own. And so then they drop down a layer and they use just widgets directly without a material design aesthetic or without a Cupertino aesthetic.
It seems like there's a lot of different components. Do they all have to be aligned on the same licensing scheme when people contribute, et cetera, et cetera? So that was a question from the chat room. I'm just kind of wondering what license you use. What was the decision made behind that?
So this is probably best answered in our FAQ. If you go to flutter.io/FAQ. But the simple answer is that everything in the Flutter/Flutter GitHub repository, that's all the Dart code, is all in a BSD style license, just one license for the whole system. The C++ side is a bit more complicated because we do use a lot of third-party tools. And so then we have to also repeat those licenses when we produce the license documentation. We do actually have a series of scripts that help keep our own engineers sane in terms of, and then we then from those scripts produce a single license file that will get embedded automatically as part of the Flutter build tools when you build an app. And we also provide some widgets pre-baked in the framework for helping you display these license files to help you meet your license obligations.
Right. Right. You know, it's interesting. The name of Flutter takes a bit of a departure from other, names of products that reference engines and things like that, right? So more scientific things. How did you come up with Flutter?
The short answer is that naming is really hard. The very first experiments that we had when we were trying to make Chrome faster were called Razor. The very first name that Flutter had for, I want to say, a year and a half, maybe 2 years, was called Sky, which we knew we could never keep as a final name. And then we worked with trademark lawyers to search for available names, and there aren't a lot of them. So that was a long, frustrating process to get a name that was available in a global sense. And then how we ended up with Flutter was that we found out through that process that Google actually has a cache of names from companies that it's bought over the years, and this one actually came from a small startup that Google had acquired some years prior, and so we were we were able to use the name, and it has worked out really well for us.
Wow. That's great. Naming is really hard, by the way. I feel your pain on that. One thing I want to just ask, it's a little bit off topic, but it was in the notes that you sent over, and I'm kind of curious about it, is you say you do 5-minute daily stand-ups. Mm-hmm. We also do daily stand-ups, but they're usually a little bit longer than 5 minutes. I'm not sure how you get through a daily stand-up in 5 minutes. Can you talk about why it is you do that and how in the world you actually have a stand-up in 5 minutes?
So I've not actually read any of the books on stand-up, so I don't know what the proper stand-up process is, but ours has evolved over the years. It started out because when the team was very first founded after these experiments, about half our team was in San Francisco, and about half our team was in our Google's Mountain View offices. And so keeping those halves of the team in sync required us to talk on a daily basis. And so we invented that we're going to have a stand-up every day at the same time. And we were a small team, so we could get it done largely in 5 minutes. As the team started to grow, we wanted to cap it and make sure that we weren't just wasting lots of time, because we had seen another team nearby that had these very, very long stand-ups, and we didn't want to repeat that. We basically use the stand-ups as a communication vehicle, just to make sure we go around the room and people say what they're working on and maybe put up a hand like, oh my God, I need help. And that's it. And it's just to make sure that we don't have two people working on the same thing and not talking to each other, or that people can get a sort of very high level sense of what the team is doing. And sometimes we have 5 people in the room. Sometimes we have 30 plus people in the room. It just sort of depends on who wants to come that day.
Wow. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show, so I want to make sure I get all my really important questions answered and out of the way. But one of the things I'm curious about is I saw this video that you did, it must be 3 years ago, not the one at Strange Loop, but the one before that, where you talk about Sky, and you call it Sky, and it looked like you were actually writing some JavaScript code in order to get your application bootstrapped. How has the process changed since then? And why?
The process of development since Sky?
Yeah.
It's difficult for me to remember which video you might be referring to. But I can tell you that the process of development has evolved a lot, in part as we've started to write editors. We have written some editor plugins as our tools have gotten more sophisticated. Because the editors now, there's like create templates so you can start out with a running app as opposed to having to write it all from scratch, which probably was the case, 3 years ago, giving a demo. Sure. The Dart language syntax has greatly improved. Like there were some recent parts of Dart 2.1. There's now a simpler, doubles will auto convert to ints automatically for you. So it saves you some typing. Dart recently dropped the new keyword. It's no longer required. Again, these were all sort of ways that the development has gotten slowly better, either by Flutter changing or by our partnership through the Dart team improving the underlying language.
Do you find that most people are just doing green starts, or are people actually adopting that that app mix-in stuff that you were doing?
So the app mix-in stuff is, or we talk about it as add to app.
There you go. Thanks.
For whatever reason. That is a relatively recent addition to Flutter. That's again about either Flutter playing nice inside and otherwise rest of the system is iOS, like using a small Flutter screen, or vice versa, putting an iOS widget inside Flutter. All of that is relatively new in the last, I would say, 6 months. And until then, the previous years prior were all sort of greenfield applications. And that is where we had seen by far the most success, when people were just starting with Flutter from scratch. But these days, I would say probably the majority of our new customers coming to Flutter have existing Android apps. And they may want to be running a new one, but they may also just want to be adding a single screen, to their existing Android app or to their existing iOS app. And so that's an area where we're spending a lot of engineering effort on really trying to make that really, really nice right now.
And do you find, maybe I'm the exception, but maybe not quite as much of an exception as I am. I have never done mobile development before, and I'm finding myself being very comfortable with Flutter. Am I the exception, or are there more people coming to Flutter from having done existing mobile apps?
We find people from all stripes. For example, one of the most popular areas of our website is we have these series of guides of, hey, you've written Xamarin before, this is how you write in Flutter. Hey, you've worked with the web before, this is how you write in Flutter. The core framework was largely designed by people who had a web influence, web background. Our current TL, technical lead for the entire project, used to run the HTML5 spec. So like has deep knowledge from the web. And so a lot of things sort of feel webby. We didn't really set out to apply to a specific set of developers. We just tried to make development better. And we tried to learn the best we could from, you know, talking to our friends over in Android or talking to our friends over in the web and taking our experiences from other things that we'd written and just trying to do a better thing.
And as being a project lead, as you know, or whatever you call that, whatever your title is, are you doing any coding these days, or are you just pushing people around?
I haven't written a lot of code professionally in probably over a year. I still like to code a little bit for fun myself and do scripts and stuff for little things. But no, my job these days is to support the engineers who are actually typing code all day. Because, yes, I manage these days.
Yeah, I understand. I manage too, but I also have to code. It's part of my day job. Anyway, so we're almost out of time, as I said. Is there anything we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we go?
You know, I think you, as I said, I actually learned a bit from this conversation of all the many, many interesting things that this amazing, you know, set of people who I get to work with every day have created over the last, you know, 4 years of development. So I think we hit the highlights.
Great. And I hope as a Flutter GDE, I will continue to carry the torch and do everything I can about it. I'm trying to speak at every conference that I normally go to and do a Flutter talk. In fact, I did a 5-minute Flutter lightning talk at the Perl conference of all places about 6 months ago. And I took the demo app and added the second button and changed the color so it was red and green from minus and plus. And I did it all in 5 minutes and it worked. The demo gods smiled on me, which is always a good thing. So I'm happy to be representing this, and I'm happy I was selected as a GDE. So I could, that's Google Developer Expert, by the way, in case anybody's acronym non-friendly there. So Eric, it's been a pleasure. It's been a treat. Congratulations on Flutter 1.0. I look forward to more cool things coming out in the future. And thanks for coming on and talking about your main job these days.
Thanks for having me.
Great. That was Eric Seidel from Google talking to us about Flutter with all the wonderful stuff. It's I tell you, I'm really excited about Flutter. As you can probably tell all the way through this show, I've been really enthusiastic. We'll have to bring him back on when they hit Flutter 2.0, and he can describe all the things that have changed since then. But yeah, this is pretty cool. So what do you think there, Aaron?
It's really interesting, you know, especially not knowing a whole lot about Flutter before this topic came up. It's really interesting, you know, kind of reading through some of the documentation that he just mentioned, actually. I was looking at the you know, they have kind of an intro for React Native developers. So, you know, what are the corollaries? If I'm used to React Native, how do I operate in Flutter? And what are the things? And how do I import, you know, code that I've used previously and blah, blah, blah. And you can do all that. And so one thing, I guess my point is that the documentation is really good. Really, really good. I don't know how they've developed. You don't see this kind of documentation usually with projects like this. So kudos to them, and it's really well done. But the other thing, the larger trend I see is, you know, we mentioned the other frameworks that folks have been using, and what I love is that it seems like the mobile world is meeting developers where they're at, right? So yeah. If you like to code in Java or Dart, you know, Flutter is a great choice for you. If you like to code in JavaScript, maybe you go with React Native or something like that. And it's just, I think it's nice for developers not necessarily to have to learn something completely new, right, to get into coding for mobile and to make it just easier for them to develop code that runs on multiple platforms. So I think Flutter is a great addition too. And there's plenty of room, by the way. It's not like, you know, we're oversaturated at this point. There's plenty of room in this space. So it's just great to see, you know, another framework like this come about and hopefully help people out, as it seems like it's helped you out in the stuff that you're working on.
Exactly. And I'm surprised you didn't pick up on any follow-up questions to the Raspberry Pi question.
No, I did not. It should have been. Why didn't we have half the show be about Raspberry Pi?
Oh, and I only say this knowing your maker maker stance. For totally. Me, that stuff is all just magical. So it's great. I also want to follow up with something that's now just escaped my mind because it asked about Raspberry Pi. Darn it. Imagine that really all Flutter ultimately is a way of painting widgets on a canvas, And so that's why they're able to bring it back to the web with Hummingbird, why they're able to bring it to the desktop. But imagine that you need a small language that knows how to do beautiful UIs on the display on your refrigerator or on your toaster or whatever, or on your dashboard of your car. So you might imagine that Flutter might eventually get into all those places too. So it's going to be interesting seeing where it goes in the future. So I think I'm right in on the ground floor of something that is going to be continue to drive development for the next 10 to 15 years, which is how I got into Perl too. So hopefully I'm going to be writing some courses and presenting at all the conferences I can and hopefully actually coding. I've got about 3 or 4 parallel mobile apps that I'm developing right now. I can't commit to one of them. It's just like, oh, now I'm going to try this. I'm going to try this. So there will be some mobile apps in both iOS and Android stores soon that will have Stonehenge Consulting Services on their labels. I am looking forward to that. So actually, the Dramanid's still in the chat room. Replace Electron, yeah. So imagine something like Electron, but you code it in Dart instead of coding it in JavaScript. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Electron killer, yep. yes. And I was actually surprised because it looked like that project got abandoned for a while, but I guess the internal people picked it up. Oh, and I forgot to ask Eric. Man, I want that the keynote equivalent software. I mean, they presented the whole conference in a desktop Dart app. And I was going, yeah, I want that. Well, Flutter app, I mean. So anyway, I could talk forever, and we're a little over time, so I got to start running down the list of who's coming up. So this is the last show for this year. We're going to have a Christmas break. Twitch Studios taking a Christmas break. Next year, the first, we're going to start the open of the show with OpenCast. It's a flexible and scalable and reliable video capture, distribution, and management system for academic institutions. So that'll be sort of interesting. Nextcloud, who was actually a guest on this show about 2 years ago, but apparently a lot has happened since then. Apparently Nextcloud had just barely forked when they came on this show, and of course now they've been their own project for quite a while. So it's basically open source Dropbox. So very, very cool. Atari is the one that I didn't know the name of, and that's not Atari. We're not talking about games. Atari is a new open source digital assets focused blockchain protocol. It's being architected as a merge mined sidechain with Monero. So for those of you that have been missing the 7 or 8 blockchain shows that we had in a row back last summer, we got a blockchain show coming up, guys. So stay tuned. Zen, XEN, previously on back in 2009. I bet they've had a lot of things happen since then. It's a hypervisor using microkernel design, providing services that allow multiple computer operating systems to execute on the same computer hardware concurrently. So we're going to be bringing them on and talk about all the changes that have happened it'll be 10 years by the time they come on. And then finally, rounding up the already scheduled guests, but I'm going to working on a lot more this week and next to try to fill the schedule in back again, is open source at Instacluster. Instacluster is a commercial operation that hosts various things like you hosted Kafka and a hosted Cassandra and things like that, but they do contribute back to the open source community, and that's apparently significant enough that they wanted to be on this show, so that is great. That's all we have scheduled for now. Twitch.tv/Floss is the homepage for this show. You can see past shows there all the way back to the beginning. You can see what we have coming up because there's a link there to our future guest link. If you have a project that is not on that list, please have the project leader or community coordinator email me, Merlin@stonehenge.com. You don't have to write that down. That's if you just remember twit.tv/floss. That's all you have to remember about this show. And you probably already have that bookmarked anyway, if you're listening to the show. Again, we have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. We took a number of questions, mostly from the Andromeda, I remember, today. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus and at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus, at least for a few more months, and at Merlin on Twitter. Please, if you use iTunes at all, if you're in that ecosystem, please leave some iTunes reviews. I think the latest one I saw was like 2010, and we've had a lot of things happen on this show since 2010. So yeah, please, reviews help other people find this show because it starts bumping it up higher and higher in the list. And especially, I search for open source, and Floss Weekly doesn't even come up in the search. So we're missing something in the description or something. You know, somebody's looking for an open source podcast, and I think we're the number one open source podcast, actually. But we don't come up very high on the list. So please, reviews help for that. I was at KubeCon last week. KubeCon, it's just like the last time I'm ever going to say that. But I've just been added as press for Southern California Linux Expo, Scale, That's coming up in February in Pasadena. So if you're planning on going there, please say hi to me. The call for papers, call for speakers, swooshed right by. I had no idea it happened. So I'm not going to be a speaker this year, darn it. I wanted to do some more talk on Flutter there, but maybe they have like a lightning talk thing that I can sign up for on premises or something. I hope that'll happen. Aaron, what do you want to plug?
Yeah, I need to get on top of SoCal Linux Expo. I know Elon reached out to me and he's talking about maybe coming down. So I need to get up. Maybe we'll have a meetup down there if we can work it out. That would be great. I just want to point out that there's still time. If you haven't already, you can order your copy, your very own copy from Amazon of Linux for Makers, which is the book that I wrote. Of course, it explains how to use Linux. It's basically a Linux primer if you're building things with Raspberry Pi. So it just kind of explains how things work. How does a file system work? How do you use the command line? All that kind of stuff. So if you're buying a Raspberry Pi for somebody on your shopping list this holiday season, this would be a great add-on to go along with that, as well as some other great books there, by the way, too. It's not just mine. So there's that. And also, if you're in the Northern California area, you're looking for a great makerspace, Benicia Makerspace is the makerspace I run, surprisingly enough, in Benicia. And you can join. So,
what a coincidence.
What a coincidence. So the name matches the location. You can join. So if you're interested in makerspace, come check us out or refer a friend if you know someone in the area that might be looking for a place to build cool stuff. We'd be glad to talk to them. And that's about it. Other than that, I hope everybody has a great holiday. This is my last day at work. I'm on PTO after this. So I'm really looking forward to the end of the day here.
Awesome. That'll be great. That'll be great. Yes, I'm going to be working every day this week and most of the next week because I have bills to pay still. It's still kind of ugly these days. Oh, yeah. And by the way, primer is what you put on your car. Primer is what you were talking about.
Yes. Is that what I said? Did I say primer?
Yeah, you said primer.
I'm getting old.
So I'm going to paint my car with this. Well, it's the problem. It's problem in English. Like we have record and record and wind and wind.
And read and read.
If you've only read the words, you may not know what they actually sound like. So I hear some really bizarre things. Anyway, okay, we're over time. So I just wanted to say happy end of the year for many of us, most of us, I guess. And happy holidays for coming up. And I will see you again next year with a brand new Floss Weekly coming up. That just sort of blew my normal outtake out. That would be an outtake now. We'll see you all again next week. No, we'll see you all again in 2 weeks on Floss Weekly.